Bearden was awarded $44,000 at mandatory arbitration. Mr. McGill sought a trial de novo. The jury awarded Mr. Bearden at trial $42,500, $1,500 less than the arbitrator awarded. Under these facts, Mr. McGill improved his position at the trial de novo, so the Superior Court committed legal error by awarding attorney's fees to Mr. Bearden in the amount of $71,800.
Does the trial court record, or the record before us, correctly indicate the total amount of costs that the plaintiff asked the arbitrator to award?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. We know the amount that was awarded. We know the amount that was requested by Mr. Bearden at the Superior Court. But in my review of the record, and I may have overlooked it, maybe opposing counsel can answer that question.
The other question I have for you, well, I have several questions, but one, we have a case, Stedman versus Cooper, that I think you were involved in.
I was, Your Honor.
And that hasn't been cited to us, and I'm curious as to why you apparently don't think that case has any application.
Well, the Stedman versus Cooper case was a case in which there was an offer of compromise. So first of all, that was one reason not to cite the Stedman versus Cooper case. Mr. Bearden, Mr. McGill, this was a de novo from an arbitration award. There was no offer of compromise.
Is the offer of compromise under the MAR statute simply replace the arbitration award?
It does, Your Honor.
So why the distinction?
The distinction because under the Nickham case and also in the Stedman case, which followed the Nickham holding, there was the determination, as the court has stated in the earlier case, that an offer of compromise becomes the total amount, and there isn't a segregation of costs because at the time that a party submits an offer of compromise, they're not entitled to costs. So this case is in a different line of cases. Mr. McGill's case is in a different line of cases than those that deal with the offer of compromise analysis.
I'm going to propose a way of looking at this and see what you think about it. What if we were to take the view that we examine all of the claims, both for damages and costs, submitted to the arbitrator, total up the dollar amounts plaintiff recovered under all of those, and then take all of those claims, but not any new claims that are costs, for example, that arise because of the trial de novo, determine for those same claims what the plaintiff recovered in Superior Court on those claims, and then compare those two numbers. Is there any problem with that analysis from your perspective?
Well, I don't know that there's any case reported.
I'm not asking about case.
Okay.
I'm asking if there's a problem. A case that would say that's wrong, or a practical problem with doing that?
Well, I think that's, Judge Leach, I think that's inconsistent with Tran versus you, which we believe is the case that controls here. And I know that Tran did not involve any award of costs at the arbitration proceeding. But the Tran case, and this court has stated, this court adopted the comparing of comparables. And I guess in your proposal, it's somewhat of a comparing of comparables, but you're changing the comparables. And it would be a difficult thing, and if I understand your hypothetical situation, if it's whatever the costs that were awarded at the arbitration award.
It's not what the costs were awarded. It's what the claims were and then the dollar amount recovered, because the plaintiff could make a claim for a cost in arbitration, for example, the cost of supplying medical records, that the arbitrator for some reason did not award, but the Superior Court did award. So that the plaintiff would have actually done better on that part of the plaintiff's case, but it is the same case that was in arbitration, so we're comparing things that were litigated in both venues. One of the problems we have with trial de novos is there are new costs that develop, and including them in the calculation puts one party to disadvantage because you don't know what future costs are going to be. And where there's a Division III case where the issue was reasonable attorney's fees for a wage claim, and the court said that that was a claim that was in front of the arbitrator, and it was also in front of the Superior Court, and because the plaintiff prevailed in the Superior Court, you put that number into the basket to calculate the total recovery, and the plaintiff had done better. I'm trying to come up with a way to reconcile all of the cases that are out there, and this is the best that I've been able to do. I'm trying to identify where I've gone wrong and ask if you have.
Thank you for that explanation. The case you referred from Division 3, Miller versus Wolf, is different, and as we pointed out in our reply brief, it is different because that was while it wasn't compensatory damages, it was a right to attorney's fees that Mr. Miller asked for at the arbitration, was not awarded, but was awarded at the Superior Court. That is different than statutory costs or prevailing costs, because that is a recovery.
Why do we focus on statutory costs? Well, I'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okay.
We'll revisit.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Corey Yaklik for Jim Bearden. We're here because the defendant McGill's attorneys took a chance on a de novo appeal from an ARB award, failed to improve their position, and now they don't want to pay the consequences of that decision. This was a perfect case for the mandatory arbitration system. It was a relatively small damages case, admitted liability.
Determining what the position, the status of the defendant was post-arbitration, and what do you think the formula is for calculating whether the defendant's position post-de novo trial is inferior or superior to what it was in arbitration?
It's the elements that were requested. So damages here and costs. Requested in both forums and awarded in this case in both forums.
Could be elements that could be requested in both forums?
Yes.
All right. So costs that are incurred post-arbitration could not have been requested in the arbitration and should not be included?
No. The costs as a category should be included. The reality is that if...
It's not the things you could have asked for, but the label of things that you could have.
Yes, and in fact, the Miller versus Wolf case is an example of that. The attorney's fees that were incurred at the trial de novo were significantly different than what could have been requested in the arbitration. But the Court of Appeals said because that is a category that was requested at ARB, denied but requested, and was awarded at the trial de novo, we're going to consider the aggregate amounts in both forums. And because the aggregate was greater in de novo, the plaintiff or the party had improved his position.
Way back in 84, the Christie Lambert case came out. And what it said was that we compare what it referred to as claims actually arbitrated claims against those same claims and how they fared in the Superior Court. And there what happened was that a cross claim wasn't served. And on the de novo trial, the cross claim had been served by then, and it was a multi-party litigation. So clearly, just looking at the numbers, one party had bettered its position. And this court said, we don't look at the bettered position. We look to the claims that were actually arbitrated. And so how do you arbitrate a claim that hasn't yet arisen? This is following up on Judge Alicia's question about costs or anything else that arises after the arbitration proceeding. If it couldn't have been put before the arbitrator, which is what Christie Lambert is talking about, then Christie Lambert would say we can't consider it. You can get it in trial because it's a de novo trial. You can recover it. But it's not part of what we look at. This is where the comparing comparables lingo came up. But the Christie Lambert case, I think, is more specific about what that means.
But, okay, well, then let's look at the Haley versus Highland case, which is a more recent Supreme Court case. In that case, the damages award in the arbitration and on the de novo were identical, but the plaintiff requested on the de novo the fees under the State Securities Act. He had not requested them in the ARB, and so the court said because he didn't request them, we won't consider the attorney's fees that were awarded on de novo, the implication being that if he had, they would have. And so...
Well, it would have been actually arbitrated.
It would have been...
That's saying the same thing as Christy Lambert, right?
Yes,
You can arbitrate something in front of the arbitrator, and he can rule against you. And
yes.
And you can arbitrate the same thing, and you can win in superior court. That is the very reason for de novo trials to
yes,
exist.
Yes.
So the question is whether or not the particular claim for relief, the request for a remedy in that particular amount was made before the arbitrator in order to compare. Are you saying that that's what the Highland case stands for?
Yes. I mean, it's sort of the Highland is sort of the flip of the Miller versus Paul Wolf Company case, because in Miller versus Paul Wolf, the attorney's fees, which were vastly different at trial de novo than they would have been at the arbitration, because
but there was no award for attorney's fees in that case in the arbitration. Isn't that what happened? The arbitrator gave nothing.
That's right.
Right.
If the arbitrator had given the fees requested, that number would have been a better number than what the plaintiff actually recovered the arbitration. So the plaintiff did improve his position
yes.
on issues actually litigated to the arbitrator in the Superior Court.
So are you saying that costs aren't litigated? Or I mean, there were...
We're asking you about is costs that are litigated at both forums, and excluding from the calculation costs that could not be litigated before the arbitrator, not the just the amount, but also sometimes the category, for example, witness fees.
Okay.
The Superior Court, where you had declarations in an arbitration.
So before you answer, here, as I understand it, the arbitrator awarded attorney's fees and costs, and those costs were related to arbitration, not the costs that Judge Leach has just identified.
In the Bearden case?
Yes. In your case.
Yeah, my case. The arbitrator awarded those costs that we requested. I mean, honestly, I thought the case would go away after arbitration, and I wasn't as...
Were there any costs that you asked the arbitrator to award that were not awarded?
I don't think so. Yeah.
And so you had attorney's fees and costs.
Yes.
Plus a damages award. All right.
The statutory $200 attorney's fee.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But if you start to parse the category of costs in this way, the unfairness of this is that necessarily the costs, the statutory costs that are recoverable, are going to be higher on a de novo. And if the mandatory arbitration system is to work, the...
Not if you're just comparing the same costs. So if there's a cost that is only accrued in Superior Court, then it wasn't subject to the arbitrator, so it's not in the mix.
Okay.
I mean, if it's not subject, it doesn't tip anything.
Your argument is there are going to be additional statutory costs, like the witness fees I just described.
I mean, necessarily.
Use of depositions.
Yes.
And that sort of thing. And so it's unfair because you're going to incur some additional statutory costs in Superior Court, so we should factor those in as well.
But you get those if you prevail in the traditional sense. In other words, the finding is for you. You get those under 010 anyway.
Yes, but what's really going on here, obviously, is the attorney's fees. Because if this were just about $2,000...
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is we're not saying that when we're talking about trying to figure out what it is that's being compared, we're not indicating that disentitles something, a prevail an otherwise prevailing party from that which 010 gives all prevailing parties. I don't want That, we're not getting mixed up in that morass. That's not what we're. That's not what we're talking about.
Understood. We're talking about improving positions.
We're talking about whether there is a fee shifting that's going to occur because of it.
Understood.
Not what statutory costs can be recovered.
I
and what triggers the fee shifting mechanism.
Yes.
And how we do the arithmetic.
But then, in the Miller versus Wolf case, where certain fees were incurred in the de novo that could not have been considered by the arbitrator.
But the problem with that argument is the plaintiff would be better off if they've got $1 of attorney's fees at arbitration and the Superior Court held they were entitled to an award of reasonable fees at the arbitration. So they did improve their position over arbitration. We don't need to look at the extra money they spent trying the Superior Court case to determine that they improved their position.
Okay.
The mere fact that they were entitled to recover fees improved their position. Dollar one got them there.
Okay. I want to call your attention to a case that neither party cited, but it was cited in Nickham, and it's been cited more recently.
Go ahead.
It's the case is, it's a Division III case, Soro versus Cormar, or Cormar versus Soro, 60 Washington App 622. It's from 1991. And, you know, basically the court says, bring your common sense to the interpretation of the language, failed to improve his position. And says, this is the direct quote, we conclude that the rule was meant to be understood by ordinary people who, if asked whether their position had been improved following a trial de novo, would certainly answer no in the face of a Superior Court judgment against them for more than the arbitrator awarded. And it's, you know, sort of overarching principle here that underlies the MAR system and that mandatory fee shifting. Thank you.
Following up on the common sense approach, the common sense approach is to look at what was awarded by the arbitrator, what was awarded by the jury. And I've had it.
The problem with all of that kind of talk is we still have to explain what the words in the statute and the statutes mean. And just saying that it makes common sense to say A or B really ignores the problem we have, and that's what these words in the statute mean.
And I'm not suggesting that the court ignore all the statute and the case law. I'm just, that is a fundamental principle that needs to be applied in looking at these issues.
And it's sort of, if we can't come up with any other answer approach, we don't get to decide the statute means what we think it ought to be. We have to decide what the legislature said.
And I will come back to Tran versus you, which is, I think, where the court did decide, and I'll read the language, and I know factually it's a little bit different because, as I said before, in Tran, there was no request for costs, or there was no award at cost at the arbitration. But this court noted it at 118 WASHAP, page 612, compare the entire judgment at trial. They rejected the argument that we should compare the entire judgment, including costs and sanctions. We look at what the award is, and here's the quote. A trial is almost always more expensive than arbitration. If Tran's interpretation was accepted, a party would invariably improve its position because additional costs, attorney's fees, and interest would be incurred. In other words, if the proposal, Judge Leach, that you have of the formula, where we're not going to look at this. Well, I would win under your proposal, but here's my challenge, and I have a few moments to think about your formula. Adopted here to make my client win, but here are the problems that I foresee for other cases, and even for this case. I was unable to answer your question about what costs were requested at arbitration. By the very nature of a mandatory arbitration, there's not a record. So if we get into this question of what costs were asked for and what were awarded at the arbitration, and we're going to only look at those and then compare it to the ultimate outcome at the trial, it would be difficult.
To use to request them, so it's not that hard. And the lawyers will know what the numbers are. The problem is trying to decide whether to settle or not when you don't know what the number is that you're going to have to beat.
That is indeed the number. I mean, that is, and indeed is the rub.
It's a race where you don't know where the finish line is.
That is.
You can decide whether to sprint the last 10 yards if you can see where the finish line is. If you don't know that the finish line is going to move, you don't want to start your sprint.
I don't really see where that's any more of a problem than any other claim. What you just, your last horrible in that parade. Any claim in an arbitration suffers from the same practical obscurity, but history has proven that there's ways to put words on paper, and it's clear what was asked for, and we're out of, well, since the legislature passed the statute specifically giving arbitrators the ability to do this, I mean, it seems sort of, it has somewhat formalized what used to be a more cultural behavior, and it seems to be less of a problem than it might have been 29 years ago.
Perhaps you're correct, Judge Dwyer, that my concern about creating a record with regard to how a superior court would apply the who has improved his position on trial de novo under Judge Leach's formula maybe isn't as much of a concern as I have made it. In this case, we would ask the court to reverse the attorney fee award because, a matter of law, Mr. McGill did improve his position under the comparing comparables of the arbitration award versus the jury award or under Judge Leach's formula. Thank you, Your Honors.
The next case.